This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello.
Hi. We've had a couple of tweets about Robert's interview. Martin Reeves, collector's buddy, has been on. He said, I used to work at the Tudor Park Hotel in my late teens and I loved it, but it was only casual, so it was a stopgap to full-time employment. I used to be a member at the Tudor Park and my dad was the captain of the golf team there, or whatever you call it. Golf club. Yeah, he was captain of the golf club there. I don't play golf, but my dad did. So thank you for that, Martin. It's a lovely place, the Tudor Park. Tracy Ferguson, brilliant to hear how Robert Richardson of the Institute of Hospitality and his team are working to improve the visibility and perception of the multitude of diverse opportunities available in the hospitality sector. What a great interview. Absolutely, Tracy. And, you know, it's one of those things that the industry has a perception to some extent of being, you know, a bit low pay and all the rest of it, and of course, like a lot of things, there are low pay parts of it, but there's also a lot of career opportunities.
Oh yeah, and you can work up, and you know, you often find people that work in hospitality have a passion, don't they?
Yeah,
they're creative often.
But the thing is, you could work in, you don't have to work in a hotel in Luton. You know, for your entire life, you could, you know, get a job in a hotel in Bali, for instance, or Hawaii, or...
Well, I stayed in...
or Rotherham.
When my new husband advised the Singapore government, they flew us out to Singapore, obviously. And they,
well, that was lucky.
Yeah. But from there, we looked at Bali, and I decided I wanted to go a bit more remote. And we went to Lombok,
which
was absolutely beautiful and totally unspoiled. It will get spoiled. I'm pretty sure that the Saudis will invest in it heavily, but it's so beautiful. And the people there are just absolutely lovely. They're tiny, and we, my new husband and I, there's a photo of us that we took with all the hotel, and we're like monsters. We look like these huge people, but absolutely very, very special people. And a lovely hotel we stayed at there.
Did you come across a Komodo dragon?
Probably. Well, my new husband was canoeing and swimming to a little island that was out there. He decided not to use their facilities and do it himself, so he swam to this island, and then when he told the guy that used to hire out canoes and flippers and things, he said, oh, you've been to Snake Island. He said, you get bitten by one of those black sea snakes and you're dead in 12 minutes. So, you have to be very careful, always check the tide. Apparently they got sharks in Ibiza now.
Have they?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're just selling timeshares.
Yeah. So, of course, flying, though, we were saying about flying, that it's not like it used to be. I mean, I'm old enough to remember, but it was kind of nice to fly.
Sop with camel, stand on the back, on the top wing.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. But you'd get a drink and a meal, and you'd settle in, and you'd be treated beautifully. Now, the last couple of times I've flown, they shout at you, move along, it's all very unbelievable. You've got to pay for a drink.
Somebody posted a picture.
Get your flight, get your ticket.
Somebody posted a picture of a flight, a Lufthansa flight.
Lufthansa.
Yeah, from Germany to the United States from the 1960s.
Oh, yeah.
And the cabin crew were bringing round a barrel of lager with a tap and serving,
and the pilot was just lying under it.
But they were serving pints from a barrel.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. It was all nice, you know. Like, I don't like all this scrabbling for chairs and seats and things. You know, I think we've gone a bit too budget, really.
But
the prices aren't cheap now.
In the 1980s, I was doing...
were you alive then?
I was doing a consultancy assignment in Inverness, and I was flying up to Inverness every week on Dan Air. Do you remember Dan?
Yeah, Dan Air. Lovely, yeah.
Yeah, Dan Air. Right, and it was the same crew every week. And I'm sat at the back of the plane, and I'm chatting to a mate of mine, and the stewardess is trying to do the emergency things, and she stops talking. She walks down the back of the plane and slapped me and said, will you pay attention? And I said, I've heard this before. She said, no, but everybody else hasn't.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, there I was thinking it was all so much more civilised in those days.
Well, it was.
Might have been just your influence.
Yeah, it was.
I was seeing a tweet from, I think it was from Tezza, our next guest, but saying about my little helper, mm-hmm. which is you. But I can't find the tweet now because I've had rather a lot.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we talk to Terry and then you can look up the tweets that we've missed so far. And then once we've talked, I'll tell you what, like, it's really hot in here. Can you put the air conditioning back on?
I can, yeah. You have your flush.
I am.
There you go.
Yeah. That's better.
Are you cold now? Let's introduce Terry.
Yeah, go on then.
Well, got Terry Thorpe, who is he's an independent contract hire and leasing provider of cars and commercial vehicles to both private and business customers. He has new and used vehicles, and they're also supplied to order. He's in the Cranbrook and Tenterden area, but you can find his website, which is dgeast.co.uk. Give him a follow at dgeast1, and see what he can do for you for hire your little car.
So it's a pleasure to welcome back onto the show our motoring correspondent, Terry Thorpe of DG East.
We need some sound.
Yeah, well, normally if he's the first guest on, he gets the cheesy tune, doesn't he? Like, you know,
yeah, he's feeling a bit left out.
Drive or whatever, and the Madness number, driving in my car, it is what I normally play him. Anyway, Terry, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to, first of all, just give us a quick overview of what it is you actually do. I mean, I know she said that you do this and that, but she didn't know what she was talking about.
Let me have a look on the card and I can't remember. Yeah. Basically, we will save you money obtaining a vehicle,
right?
Which is the simple thing about it. So you can either pay for it with cash, you can do it on a HP, you can do a PCP, you can do a lease, or you can do a contract hire.
Right.
The sort of five main funding methods.
Okay. Let's have a quick look at that, because I want to ask you a question there. And there's a difference between business and personal. So I'm thinking more personal at the moment. What's the most popular method of funding a car these days?
Probably keeping your money in the back pocket and waiting until the market stabilises.
Right, okay.
And that's the advice I give to quite a few people at the moment. I mean, it's unprecedented. I know it's a terrible world and everybody uses that, but at the moment it is.
Yeah.
Supply is absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
You're waiting 12 months. Yeah. I've been quoting 15 months for some product. The pricing is going up on a bi-weekly basis, manufacturers increasing prices, discounts being taken away completely. So it's very much unusual marketing situation.
Absolutely, and that's had a knock-on effect in the second-hand market, has it not?
Second-hand cars, but in the main, are very, very scarce. Mm. If you look at most of the large dealers, they have 60% tarmac and about 40% vehicles to sell.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. And just for completeness, what is the major problem with manufacturing at the moment?
Well, it's still the semiconductor problem, and right. I've got a little printout here. I didn't realise that there are possibly between 3,000 and 5,000 semiconductors in each vehicle.
Yeah.
And obviously the car industry wants semiconductors, the TV industry, the camera industry, the motor sort of telephone industry want them, the washing machines, everything needs a semiconductor and in great numbers.
Yeah.
So that's a pressure on the production. And there were some issues about 2 years ago with factories not being able to function. Then obviously COVID and all the other knock-on effects. So it's basically supply of components exacerbated by our friend Mr. Putin attacking Ukraine, where a lot of components are made for the European car market.
Mm.
So certain manufacturers are unable to produce part of their range because they can't get wiring looms and they can't get other components.
Absolutely. And for those that don't kind of really appreciate what is, you know, the semiconductors, as you quite rightly say, are used in almost every facet of everything these days. But in the old days, if, you know, I don't know, if you had carburetors manufactured in, you know, Wakefield and they stopped manufacturing, you could get someone in, I don't know, Ohio to knock you out some carburetors. It's not quite so easy with semiconductors.
No, you can't just quickly change your type of production from one, you know, wheel bearing to a different size wheel bearing to a different size something else bearing.
So, what's the solution to this? Is it are they firing up to make more quickly? Or
allegedly, Bosch are building a factory going to cost them about 400 million.
Where
euros.
Are they building it?
Germany, I would imagine, being a nice German company,
because they could do it, you know, cheaper. I'm just thinking of, you know, China and how everything's in China. They could do it in Poland, might be cheaper or somewhere.
Well, I think you'll find that it's going to be a major European country to start with, but then there will probably be other people making semiconductor factories. I mean, our clever friends, the Chinese, saw that there was going to be a shortage, so they bought up all the semiconductors in the world and corralled them, and they've been able to make their phones and their other components, and their car industry is still going.
Yeah, but then they're locking up all their people for 65-75 days, so they're probably not using their cars much. So
no. Yeah, but they don't sell them to the Chinese, do
no.
they?
No, they can't sell for
everyone else.
So it's just, so it's for others, for export.
Yeah, yeah. They're all on push bikes, aren't they?
Yeah.
About 14 on a bike.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
They're not. They're all locked up in their flats on their compounds.
But you know, this is one of the geopolitical issues that we faced over the last 20 years. Chinese companies have been going around buying up semiconductor manufacturers, and you know, I think this is why I agree with Terry. I think Bosch or whoever else is going to enter increased semiconductor manufacturing is going to be very wary of where they do it. Yeah, because even though it might be more expensive to do it in the West, we need some security.
Yeah,
you know, because we haven't. You know, we've suddenly realizing we haven't got any security of these products because they're all made in places that are cheap. And that's great until they lock you down or they stop making them or whatever, and then you're, you know, in the proverbial doo-doo.
I think the problem is the Chinese are doing a bit more than that. They're probably buying up countries.
Yeah.
The amount of investment they're pumping into Africa.
Yeah.
Somebody said the other week that if they have a delegation go from Britain, they will get 3 hours of waffling. If they get a delegation go from China, they get a new school.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. They are pumping money to get favours from a lot of these central African countries.
Mm, which are very poor and need the money and the investment.
Yeah.
And of course, there's another reason why people like China are going to Africa, because it's a source of all the components you need for electric vehicles. Cobalt and lithium and all the other stuff that you need. We'll talk about that in a minute. So we've got this supply issue going on. But just coming...
It's not me. It's all right. Carry on.
Sorry, it's my pacemaker.
Okay. I just wonder what it was. I could hear... I thought it was... anyway. I've forgotten what you said to me now, Terry, when I asked you what the normal, the most likely way that people purchase new vehicles...
I would think now more and more people are doing it on some form of monthly payment.
Right.
PCP is a bit up in the air with the second-hand market being very, very strange.
Mm.
So mainly leasing now. Some people still want to own a vehicle, and that is their goal, that they want to pay for it either outright or on some form of credit. But with the way that prices are going, and in a normal market, depreciation over a 3-year period means, would you invest £20,000 and see half of it go over a cliff in 3 years?
Mm.
Not a wise way of investing your money.
Mm.
But you know, some people prefer to just look out there and that is my car.
Yeah,
I own it.
Mm. It's not something that I do or have done for a long, long time. In the past, I have bought cars. For many years now, I've always had, I don't know what, leased cars. Is it a personal contract?
Yeah.
I've always bought mine. So like my Merc, I had it for three years.
Yeah, but you buy new or second-hand?
My Merc was a year old.
Yeah, so it's second-hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, it's harder to lease a second-hand car than it is a new car.
I kind of just like it now because I've got no payments and it cost me enough taking it to the garage, to be honest.
Then what you've saved in that, you've paid out in AdBlue.
Yeah, I know. or getting
she has to put AdBlue in it every week.
Yeah,
it's a van, isn't it? Really?
Do you know what it used to just stop because of the AdBlue? It's unbelievable.
But they're designed to do it, and they're following European legislation. And we're back to the biggest problem: get politicians involved in anything, and they will make a complete horlicks of it.
Absolutely, like catalytic converters, for instance, and diesels. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about what I should be doing then. Not buying it.
You should be sitting down and talking to me.
Oh, here I am, though.
With a white sheet of paper and put down all the things you would like to have, and then we'll get to the other side of the equation and all the things that you can afford to have, and then we meet in the middle.
Because I think I sent you a text once about when we were in Sweden working, and we hired a Nissan something or other, which was a really nice car. It was like a little, a bit like a Honda CRV, which I've
got. Was it a Nissan Juke or something?
It was quite big, with quite a nice big boot for luggage.
It was a 4x4?
Yeah, it wasn't a Duke, was it? I'll have to look at my text.
Could have been an Amazon, which I had in the States, which is enormous, but no luggage room.
No, it wasn't big. It wasn't that big. It was like a sporty thing, with a really nice boot that just shot up, which was nice. I've sent you the link to it once, but a while back. I'll have a look at my text. But that was a nice car. You know that how I feel about Hondas. Hondas are amazing. I mean, ours has done 250,000 miles.
There's only one problem with Honda. They don't make cars anymore. Not for this market, in any case.
Oh, okay.
They went back to Japan, didn't they?
Ah, yes, but they're still making new models, and they're doing hybrids.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to say, they do the one that recharges itself as you drive.
Yeah.
Why are you saying they don't do it anymore?
Well, because they pulled out of the UK and the European market in terms of manufacturing.
Yeah. Oh, so they don't make them here, but you can still buy them here?
Yes. Well, of course, yeah.
So where do they manufacture them? Just Japan.
Japan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they launched many years ago. I had a Honda NSX.
Nice?
Yeah. And they've recently, in the last few years, launched a new one. And it took them a long time to get around to launching a new one. But the original one I had was absolutely stunning. It was absolutely superb.
Why did you get rid of it?
Because, you know, I swapped it for a Jeep. Because I lived down a 5 mile country lane, and I took the bottom out of it every time I drove home. But it had it was one of the first cars that had an electronic turbo. Can't remember what they called them now. They had a particular name. They're famous. Honda are famous for them now, but and most of the manufacturers have similar. But it was one of the very first where, instead of having a fuel injected turbo, it was electronic turbo. So there was no lag in it at all.
Was it supercharged?
No. I can't think what it was called, Terry. It will come to me later. Yeah. But basically, if you tootled around to the shops, the car was perfectly fine. If you got it on a flat piece, I drove through France one Sunday morning in it, and I put my foot down, and this turbo, it wasn't even called a turbo. I can't remember what it was called, but it was basically acting like a turbocharger. And I put my foot down, and the car nearly broke my neck taking off.
So fast.
And I flew down the motorway. I was on the E16 from northern France early on a Sunday morning, and I passed everything, and then in my rearview mirror I see a car, but I can't quite make it out, and it caught up with me really quickly for me to see it was a police pursuit car. Right, and it came past me and pulled me over, and it was a police Lamborghini.
Wow. Right?
And they went, "Wow, what have you got there, mate?" And I went, "It's a Honda." And they went, "You were doing 150 km. And I went, "Was I?" And they went, "Yeah, it's brilliant."
I don't think they said it in that accent.
Yeah, they were. They were Cockneys. No, they were two Cockney gendarmes. Yeah, well known. Anyway, what were we talking about? Your Nissan that you liked. Jules.
Oh yeah, my Nissan was good. But I need to look back because I've WhatsApped it to Terry because I found it. It was just nice, and I am a fan. I think, having had two Hondas, I had a Honda Prelude when I was in my 20s, which was great. And again, that went on and on and on until finally the engine was still amazing, but I was having to climb out the window to get out because the door wouldn't open. So I love a Honda. That's been great. Merc is great, looks lovely, super to drive, but just costs a fortune, don't you think?
And your roof leaks.
Well, I've had that done.
Oh, have you?
So that cost me. And probably
soft tops.
To be...
I don't like soft tops.
Well, I think in this country, see, I love it. I love the wind in my hair. Mm. I drive at 70 miles an hour with the roof off.
Yeah.
Ruins my hair, but it's just so lovely to see the sky. And yeah, I'm a bit of a hippie, aren't mm-hmm. I? Yeah, so.
A pram without handles.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna find my thing to Terry.
Okay, so in the last few years, the method of ownership of new cars has changed, and people are tending to buy them on Never Never or on leases or on finance at best. From your point of view, based down here in the southeast, what kind of vehicles are people going for? For me, I'm, as a bit of a car enthusiast, over the last kind of decade or so, most cars look the same, and you know, not surprisingly, because they're all tested in the same wind tunnels and they're the same aerodynamics and fuel consumption and everything. But you've basically got a choice of three types of car, as far as I can see, which is a hatchback, a saloon, or a 4x4.
Yeah.
And of course, you've got an estate as well, but
yeah, but it's a basic situation that most cars are designed by a computer.
Yeah.
As soon as you get a computer involved, they are looking for certain features. Mm. The only difference with a lot of cars is the badge on the front.
Yeah.
There's so many shared platforms now.
Yeah.
You know, Audi VW Group put out four different ranges. Mm. You've got Peugeot, Citroën, who have now got into bed with Vauxhall. So again, you've got shared platforms.
It's
very much a case that you go to buy a car and then find that it's something else under the skin.
Oh, absolutely. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. He recently bought a Porsche Taycan, the electric Porsche.
Audi e-tron.
Which is Audi e-tron.
Yeah.
Yeah, only it's $5,000 more if you buy it with a Porsche badge on the front. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've just taken an order for an e-tron, which we will see in about 12 months.
Right.
Which is the other problem.
Right.
You've got to get used to waiting for things.
Okay. So, in your experience, what is the take-up like of hybrids and pure electric cars?
Pure electrics, really, I think, are still only any good if you're in a city situation. To be going around the countryside with a pure electric, the distance you can get is still a problem. You get manufacturers giving you wonderful figures that are attainable, and I've just had a situation with a guy who was going for a Mustang Mach-E, saying it could do 348 miles on its batteries.
Right.
But if you drive it on a motorway most of the time, you get no regeneration from braking, so that distance is down to about 250.
Right, yeah.
They don't give you that in the information.
Sure, yeah.
So it wasn't practical for him because he's doing 30,000 miles a year and most of it is going to be on a motorway.
Yeah.
So electric cars, next generation, when they're all doing 600 plus, will be, I think, the thing to do.
Yeah.
My fear now is anybody jumping into an electric and buying it with their hard-earned pennies will find when they come to change it in 3 years' time that they are so out of the game because their battery capacity is far less than you will be able to get 3 years' time, or the godsend of hydrogen will be available and we'll all throw electric away because we don't want cobalt and we don't want to have to try and put lead-lined jackets in the floor to put the batteries in, and we'll use this abundant element that we can create fuel from.
Absolutely. And electric cars are expensive.
Yes.
And they're kind of one use. And that's what bothers me, to be honest. I can't see how you could get a return on an electric car in the second-hand market. It's just not going to...
They are really, really expensive. And
well, they're expensive to buy, but once you've driven it for a couple of years, who's going to buy a second-hand electric car off you?
Exactly, with an old battery.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other theory, obviously, is this idea of plug-in hybrids.
Mm.
Scale Electric did plug-in electric cars. Why, you know, if you're going to have a hybrid, let it self-charge.
Yeah, exactly. Why well, the do Honda one does.
Yeah, this is it. Some of them can do self-charge. The Lexus ones have been doing it for 15, 20 years. Let it charge itself. But if you've got to go out there in the middle of the pouring rain to plug the thing in and be able to go to work next morning. Where is the logic?
Yeah,
I mean, let's do it. It's either a hybrid or it's petrol or it's diesel. It's not half.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Can agree more.
I think I'm just looking through my old photos of when I went to Sweden and Denmark. So we had a conference in Denmark, and then because we are passionate about Volanda, the original that's all done in Swedish. I don't like the Kenneth Branagh one particularly, but I love the original ones. They're very dark crime dramas with Hendrik, somebody or other, the actor, and there's two actors that do it. And so we then did a pilgrimage to Malmö in Sweden, where it's all filmed, and we went to where he had pizza in the film and, you know, in the series. So I think it might have been
you
a Mazda.
Sad-o.
Huh?
You sad-o.
Yeah, I know. It is really sad. And we looked at where it was filmed. But we are mad on Wallander. Have you ever watched Wallander?
I haven't got a clue what you're talking about.
And it
about.
Makes you... Because it's all dark. It's all in Swedish. So you learn... You got subtitles, but we learned duck. And blood and murder. You learn it all, you see, because it's all really English, but we're just blood, the blood. But tak is thank you, I think. Or it might be yes, I can't remember.
We didn't really go in then.
Yeah. We didn't learn it much.
This is about 4 years ago that we watched it, and we need to watch it again. But I've just tweeted you my drive. I think I was going across the bridge from Denmark to Sweden.
Right.
You might be able to know, but I'm pretty sure it was a Mazda.
Oh, it was a Nissan just now.
Yeah, I know. I've changed it to a Mazda now.
All right.
I think it might have been a Mazda.
All right.
But it was a really, really, really nice car.
And did you hire this car or something? Or did you just see one?
No, hired it.
Right.
Had it for a week and it was delicious to drive.
Okay. Not a Volvo then? You were in Sweden and you didn't hire a Volvo?
No, I didn't. Yeah. No.
Okay.
But they all drink, funny, because Denmark's beautiful. Have you been to Denmark?
I have indeed, yeah. So I've worked in Denmark.
Have you?
Yeah, in Copenhagen.
And you know when you drink a little glass of champagne, they have it in a coupe. They serve these lovely old coupes, coupe glass.
I don't know.
Not a flute glass. But
I don't know.
Yeah, it's very nice. And of course, Sweden, it's just so clean and civilized. And we had herrings all the time.
Clean and civilized and herrings. Yeah, herrings. That don't go in the same sentence, that doesn't.
A herring.
Anyway, yeah, they could power cars with those, really, couldn't they?
Yeah, they should.
Roll them up.
Be a bit smelly.
Yeah. Fish oil, that's what you need. Mm. Fish oil power car.
Yeah. Well, they do collect rubbish, don't they, for... food waste and things to power cars.
Oh, chip oil.
Chip oil,
yeah.
What's all that about?
Having said all the things that we've said about different types of vehicle, in terms of the public's uptake, are you seeing a move to electric vehicles or hybrids?
Very slowly.
Right.
The main decision that most of my business customers want is cost.
Right.
So they'll come on and they say, yes, we should be using green vehicles. So you give them a price. Is there an alternative? And you say, yes, there's a cheaper price if you want to go petrol or you want to go diesel.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do 30,000 miles a year, then there's going to be a saving. And the other thing is people are still panicking for 2030.
Right.
We are at 22.
Yeah.
You can have 2-3 year contracts. And then make the decision of where we're going next.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at the cost, then at the moment, petrol, diesel, cheapest for monthly rentals.
Yeah.
Then we go to hybrid.
Mm.
Then we go full electric. And it'll stay like that probably for the next 3 years. Maybe longer.
And you're absolutely right, of course. And that is another reason why leasing and personal contract hire are the way to go with in terms of acquiring a car, because then you're not stuck with something you can't shift.
Yeah.
You just give it back.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to be very careful. Obviously, residual values at the moment are very, very unusual, but they are so high because of the shortage of used product.
Yeah.
And this is why you're finding that if you try and hire a car at the moment, anywhere in Europe or even in the States, the prices are double what they were 12 months ago.
Yeah.
Because they got rid of a lot of their car fleets. Now they can't replace them. So they're saying, right, we can only hire this thing once, we're going to charge you whatever. I just got quoted for 4 days in a Ford Fiesta in Dublin, £850.
Good grief.
I said, I'm only hiring it, I don't want to buy it. But no, £850 for four days.
We're almost back to the days of what I used to do when I was a kid. When I was a kid growing up in Bursted, there used to be a second-hand car dealer on the A20 between Bursted and Maidstone called FEW. I used to sell bangers. And we used to go on a Friday night and buy a car that we drove over the weekend and then dumped it back in his thing on a Monday morning. Yeah, you'd pay like 30 quid for a car and then take it back and he'd give you 5 quid back for it or something. Mind you, they were death traps, most of them.
Without MOT, probably.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, MOTs and tax. And yeah, that was luxury stuff, that. Okay. We've talked about this a few times, but I just want your thoughts on this. I know that you're a bit of a fan of hydrogen as the fuel of the future. I've saw something recently about a mob that are playing with solid state batteries. Have you come across that in any way?
No, I haven't had that one foisted upon me. I'm sure there'll be some legs in it. We'll be back to the same problem. How do they create them? How do they dispose of them? What's the cost per mile? And will the market take to it?
Yep.
And at the moment, I think we're still heading down the improving the batteries. That will certainly go that we will be looking at double battery capacity, as we did with mobile phones. You know, they started off like a briefcase. They've ended up now, you know, small as anything. And I think that battery technology will get better. And then there will come a time when more manufacturers have fired money into hydrogen to give an alternative. And that will then be the time when you have to make a choice, like we did with VHS and Betamax, which way you're going to go.
I just want to finish up on, because we kind of talked about cars in general and personal vehicles. In terms of the company car market, is that still a fairly robust market, or less and less people taking company cars?
It's changing insofar as the company is not leasing the car and giving it to the employee to use as part of their package. The Chancellor has obviously jumped on that and made it less attractive to have a company vehicle. But a lot of companies now who've got staff doing very large mileages realize that they need a car to do their job. They can't all sit on a Zoom call all day. So they've got to have an ability of using a vehicle to do their jobs. So they're saying to them, right, we will give you X pounds in your packet. It saves us some NIC. It saves you being charged by the Chancellor. So it gets round the tax situation. Alternatively, those who can use a fully electric vehicle are able to take a company car and now pay 2% BIK because the Chancellor stopped it being zero. And if you go for a very, very efficient hybrid doing over 60 miles on its battery power, you can get down to 8% BIK. So your tax bill is very, very low, but you're still getting the benefit of a company vehicle.
Right, okay.
My neighbour has got a BMW electric car, really, really nice, and it's so quiet. He purrs off. So I kind of wonder, in some ways, is it the tyres that make a noise though in rain? So will it still make a noise, or
it'll only be a bit of road noise? I mean, this is another question: are electric cars safe in a town situation? If you are a person who's visually challenged and you're trying to cross a road, you can't hear an engine. So you would step out and all of a sudden you're on the bonnet of a BMW or a Tesla or whatever. It may be that someone's going to have to say,
little jingle bells on it or something.
We've got to put a little noise under
engine
the bonnet.
Note on it.
We've got our back garden it goes onto the Herne Bay Road, and that road has got so busy because as the Thanet Way has got busier, that people have come rat running down to the Herne Bay, and we have constant traffic now. So I go out at 8 a.m, just brush my hair or something in the garden. I like to listen to the birds and stuff, and you can hear constant traffic. So I was kind of hoping that maybe electric, but then you've got all these idiots in Herne Bay, mostly, who have souped up their cars and they've made them really noisy, and their motorbikes. I said, when did that happen? I thought it was illegal to make that awful noise.
Well, no, it's okay as long as you don't get caught. But the big problem that we're now going to find, electric cars are extremely quick off the mark.
Yeah.
I would suggest everybody driving an electric car needs an advanced driving test.
Mm. What do you mean they're quick off the mark? They just go?
0 to 60 in 4 seconds, okay. The one I've just
taken. Would it take hands 2.8 seconds to 60 miles an hour?
You know, these things are missiles. And you've got people driving them who've been driving ordinary vehicles, suddenly jump in one of these and are not able to cope. It's beyond their capability. Oh. As we used to say, when we were racing boys, they will run out of talent and very quickly, and you'll see electric cars in the hedges and the ditches. The insurance premiums are massive already because the insurance industry realizes this is a potential bomb about to blast. So you will find that the insurance will go even further up the ladder, but they should not be in the hands of inexperienced drivers. Again, government need to look at this before we start having serious accidents.
But they won't, will they?
No. Of course they won't.
It's a bit like the electric scooters, isn't it? Yeah. They're just there now.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
It's all, you know, we're managed by soundbite politics. It's all just soundbites that sounds good. Mm. Yeah, I was a totally different issue, but I was arguing with somebody on Twitter the other day about this.
Unusual, isn't it, Terry?
About a so-called windfall tax on energy companies. And I was trying to point out why it won't work. Not because it's not right or anything. It just actually won't work, yeah? Because someone like BP, for instance, made a loss of $20 billion last year, so they're not going to pay any tax, yeah? Because no matter what you do, they're not going to pay tax because they didn't make any profits, or they've offset the profits against their losses. And people don't understand how these things work, so they want to argue about it. But it's typical of politicians that they use that to gull the public by going, we're going to do something about that. What they actually need to do is remove the stupid legislation they put in place in the first place that caused the cost of living to go up.
Stop tinkering.
Yeah. Okay, so we live in interesting times as far as vehicles are concerned. We've not touched on it, and we haven't actually got a lot more time. But of course, we're talking about cars. We do have commercial vehicles as well, and I have seen electric buses, and I've actually seen an electric lorry, but they don't look very practical to me.
The problem is weight and distance. And if you're going to have a very large commercial vehicle, you're going to need a lot of batteries, so you lose volume for carrying. So again, when the batteries improve, they'll be able to offer it. Some of the French manufacturers are doing vans that can run around the middle of Paris delivering bread and cakes and things, and doing about 45 miles. Well, that's great. But it's no good going from Ashford to Tenterden to Hawkhurst and back again, because you'll be sitting at the roadside somewhere looking for a battery charger.
Yeah. We had that in the 50s and 60s. It was called a milk float.
Yeah. That's it.
Cool. Terry, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. Give us a shout out for your website so that people can find out what you do and they can interact with you and get you to order them their new motors.
Eventually.
We are
www.dgeast.co.uk, and we are on the website. We've got Twitter, we've got Facebook, we've even got a telephone, 01580 71550, and we will talk to people.
Fantastic.
Wow.
That's really novel stuff. That is really novel.
That's out there.
Well, you know, in Spain, we're still trying to get our electric on. So the first electric company went bust, apparently, which was last October. Of course, we haven't been out there for 2 years. And we've been shuffling between the bank and the electric company. I've got a cleaner out there who's been phoning them for hours. Still no electric. We've paid it. it's you know, we think we're bad in this country, but, you know.
They haven't got any.
What?
electric.
Probably
not. I haven't got any electricery. Yeah, they're looking for it.
Well, yeah. My son is going out there in June with Mimi, his girlfriend. And I said, you better take some candles, boy, because you're not. And also, the hot water is electric out there. So
they're charging all their cars with it. That's what they're
saying.
It'll be mañana, you know.
Yeah.
Vari Murray, who's listening up in Scotland, she's a chef, and she is on the Twitter at V65IF for Freddie Y, and she was talking about the high streets from earlier where you and I were rattling on about them. It was my first time back in Edinburgh on Sunday, and I met up with Twitter friends from Florida. Two of my go-to restaurants I found had closed. Another two were closed for Sundays, reducing working hours. But the town was bustling and bouncing back, so it's good. So I said, it's always sad when you lose a favourite restaurant that you're fond of.
Yep.
But it's good to hear that Edinburgh town is thriving.
Okay. Just following up with another car thing. For classic cars, chart-topping music and food, motor on down to the Bettshanger Country Park. The Deal Classic Car Show is back at Bettshanger Country Park on Saturday the 28th of May. It's from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Over 700 beautiful vehicles will be on display, showcasing the best of vintage British cars and motorcycles. But what about this? Four-time Brit Award nominees and one of the biggest acts of the noughties, Top Loader, will be performing their classic songs, including the global hit Dancing in the Moonlight.
Oh, Dancing in the
That's
Moonlight.
That's him. You got him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So that's 28th of May at Bettshanger Country Park, the Deal Classic Car Show. Coming up in June, why not join Sue Hainsby and keynote speaker Gemma Fairclough-Haynes for a Women in Business brunch. This is taking place at the Burlington Hotel, that's Dan Giuseppe's gaff in Folkestone, on the 9th of June. That's Women in Business brunch. You can go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar to find out all about it and book your ticket.
And the lovely View IT Training, you can find
Helen,
her. Yes, you can find her on, well, I'll read out her website. It's vueitraining.co.uk. She's based in Kent, and she helps people with their Microsoft Office training requirements. And she has said, it's very interesting stuff listening to Terry on electric cars today. I think we all want one, don't we? We all kind of, I kind of hanker after one. I've sent you a link on Twitter.
I don't think we do want one.
Well, don't we? With bells on, as long as you can hear it.
No.
And as long as it's self-charging, I'd like one. Yeah, I'd like one. Oh, if you offered me a self-charging, what was it, Mazda, I've sent you a link on Twitter,
right.
I would take it. Mm. Or even the new Honda self-charging, I would like to test drive.
But that is not pure electric. This is that you're crossing over.
So it's a hybrid.
A hybrid self-charging is the best we will get at the moment.
Yeah, but that's nice.
What's the point,
hybrid self-charging is what I'd like.
Yeah, you're not on company car tax, are you? So why did you need to go down that route when you can get a petrol car for less money?
Well, I'm a limited company. Do I not? I don't get any perks, do I?
I'll sit down with you and we'll go through
your
liability. Yes.
But only at a vineyard we could go through it, I think, with the dogs.
How about Old Dairy Brewery? That's got a lovely view over the land.
Yeah, we could have pints.
The Construction Expo 22. Is in September at the K2 Crawley, and it's the place to meet loads of construction professionals from the South East, London and the UK nationally. 87% of business directors agree it's easier to communicate face-to-face than via online. You can book a free ticket by going to www.constructionexpouk.co.uk, and that's taking place on the 22nd of September at the K2 Event Centre in Crawley.
Super. And business owners are to learn secrets of success at the Finance Hub. Entrepreneurs and small business owners will learn how to radically drive business growth to their industry with a speaker held event at the Finance Hub, which is on the 19th of May. And small business success is an evening at the Finance Hub. Let's see where their website, the website that you need is the Finance Hub. .money/events. You can get tickets and more info about the event then. And speakers and sponsors on the day include Julia Olden, who's the co-founder of Office Tribe, Neil Simmons, managing director of TN Recruits, and Gillian Palmer, director of Lending Made Simple and founder of the Finance Hub. So they've also got a property event which they had in April, which was very, very popular. popular, apparently.
Cool.
And all details will be on kentbusinessradio.co.uk after the show, if not now.
It will. Chucko beer.
Oh, I've imbibed many of Paul Babra's beers.
Is a new uplifting experience and taste introduced by Carrara. Brewed last year at the Ramsgate Brewery, Chucko in Punjabi is same as saying like cheers or scald or prost or salte or chin chin. Chef Paul Babra's new edition baby beer will be available in the legendary market. In the University of Kent, MBA students review Chucko Chucko as a case study for its globalisation project. I'm thrilled by the response I received at Travola Food and Drink Show at in Belgium. Paul Barbara says, I see a greater future and for sure, Chucka Chucka will have a new range of customers and business opportunities. People's drinking tastes keep changing. A well-done beer is in abundance of daily goodness, enjoyment and cheers, as we say, Chucka Chucka. Paul recently visited Belgium and met the British ambassador and the Flanders deputy governor, head of trade and advisor and local brewers to introduce them to his beer. Now, I don't drink, so I don't know because I haven't tasted it.
It's very nice, it would really complement Indian food.
Right, is it chili flavoured?
It's light and a little bit spicy. Yeah,
yeah, spicy yeah. beer.
Yeah. Very, very good indeed. Yeah. Lovely.
Five ways to use positive psychology to measure and improve wellbeing at work. This is an event by Changing Minds UK. Taking place on Friday the 10th of June at 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. and it's an online event. You can book your place by going to eventbrite.co.uk. Five ways to use positive psychology.
Super. Change now. This is a program that's coming out. It's the Renault Global Launch Oscar nominated director France 2030 investment plan, exploring change with IPCC and Mike Horn, which is among sessions announced by Climate Solutions Events. What's the date today? I've no idea, but London,
it's the 17th today.
Oh, okay, so that's quite old. London 12th of May. Let's skim on. There's a full program that comes on in France. You can see some outlines by the French government's plan to sustainably transform key economic sectors and position France as a sustainability leader. To find out more about this, you can go to changenow-summit.world, and that's for more info on Change Now 2022. So thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you for agreeing to mention the dog appeal as advertised on AK Pet Services website.
All
right. The charity is supporting Paws, which is based in Sittingbourne. They train support dogs specifically for people like Freddie. The dogs are to help people suffering from autism and sensory issues, and it's to help them cope with life. It costs around £10,000 to train and supply each dog, and the whole process takes up to a year. Tree of Hope is the umbrella organisation which organises fundraising for this. As Adrian may have told lots of people, Freddie is my grandson. This is from Ken Wheeler, by the way. Freddie is my grandson who has had a very difficult time when his mum nearly died as a result of leukaemia. Seeing her paralysed and unable to see for months on end in hospital and her long convalescence following a bone marrow transplant left him traumatised. He's been diagnosed as being autistic and he has extreme anxiety and sensory issues, so much so that he's unable to put on clothes without considerable pain. He's not been to school for months and he's seeing a therapist.
So tough.
Yeah.
Very sad.
So if you want to find out more and more importantly, donate some funds to this charitable organisation, Paws, to train autism dogs. If you go to Pet Talk on Adrian's website and then press the donate now button, you can find out all about it and donate a few pennies. That's akpetservices.co.uk/pet-talk. And that email was from Ken Wheeler.
And Tracy Ferguson is saying that she agrees with something. And I've got to find out what now. She's agreeing with somebody. But let's just say that she's saying that it's always lovely to hear how people use the Plucky's World cards. That's what she's the owner of Plucky's World cards. And somebody has sent her a lovely thing with Bobby saying, since I discovered Plucky's World Strength cards. My training sessions have got off to a very strong start. It's amazing how it gets people who've just met chatting like old friends. Personal development, Plucky's project. So thank you for that. That's a very, very nice testimonial. That's the word I wanted. Testimonial.
Fantastic.
Rather than thing me, Bobby.
Southeast Construction Awards 2022. The platinum sponsor of these awards is the lovely folks at All Health Matters. One of the best things you can do for your business, the businesses that will always stand out are those that have awarded, have won awards, winning award-winning next to their name, because it raises them above their competitors. Winning a business award can open doors to getting contracts, finding new supply chains, and breaking into new markets. Awards celebrate hard work and success and are great PR opportunities. It's fantastic to be recognised, so it's important to make sure that people know what your business has achieved. The Southeast Construction Awards are free to enter, and you can enter as many categories as you wish. And these are the categories that are available: Women in Construction, Best Construction Project, Best Architectural Design, Construction Contractor, Best Supplier, and Best Apprentice. Entering the awards is free, quick and simple, and you do it by going to constructionexpoawards.co.uk, and the deadline is Friday the 2nd of September.
And there's a new addition to the Elite Pubs family. It's called The Wishful Thinker in Lenham.
Oh, yeah.
It's opening in this winter, 2022, and it's boasting of 18 bedrooms, Paul Andrews,
yep,
with the ultimate staycation, plus an impressive dining area and even a stage for the ultimate live experience. Whether you're local or simply passing through, that's Lenham in Kent, we simply can't wait to welcome you to our biggest project yet.
That's opening in the autumn, isn't it?
Yeah.
It used to be the White Horse at Samway, is what the pub was called originally.
You know a lot about these things, considering you're teetotal.
Well, yeah, there was a time when I wasn't.
And, of course, it's the famous Marsh Breakfast Networking. It's at 7:45 a.m. on Thursday the 19th of May, so that's the day after manana. It's at the Ship Inn in Dymchurch. You can book by going to www.marshnetwork.co.uk.
Fantastic. Do you know what?
Is it the end of the show?
We've reached the end of another show.
Wow, that went very quickly.
I want to say a huge thank you to this week's show sponsors. We do social media and a social media gym. To my stonkingly gorgeous co-host, the lovely Jill Serkin. And we wish her a lovely holiday.
Yes.
And we will see her in 3 weeks' time.
No doubt. I'll send you a little photo.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. Two fantastic guests, Mr. Robert Richardson, the Chief Executive of the Institute of Hospitality, and our motoring correspondent, Mr. Terry Thorpe of DG East Vehicle Services. Thank you all. Thank you to everybody that tweeted and emailed. We'll be back for another show next week. Well, we won't. I will.
Oh, yeah.
But she won't. I'll be doing it on my own. But we'll see you next week. Have a fabulous week, everyone.
I'm sure everybody will tune in.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.